We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I talk to you!
On Talk Radio.
Dismiss!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. As Christmas rolls ever closer, our thoughts are turning to where we're all going to be by the time Parliament goes home for the holidays. Jose Mourinho is not going to be sitting in his office at Manchester United. He's just been fired, but he could get somewhere between 12 million and 18 million just for walking away. And of course, the newspapers haven't exactly got this one right. Many of them predicting this morning that he wasn't going anywhere. Guess what, though? It looks like yesterday's prediction that nothing will happen before January down in Parliament looks more true than ever. Last night, Jeremy Corbyn insisted on having a symbolic vote of confidence in the Prime Minister. It means nothing, it will achieve nothing, and it is unlikely to change anything, even if it happens. Welcome to stalemate Britain. How on earth does Jose Mourinho get the sack when Theresa May is still in a job, for heaven's sake? 0344 499 1000. We're joined by a whole host of guests this morning, including the fabulous Mr. Alan Brazil from TalkSport's Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast. He's going to tell us what he makes of what's going on up at Old Trafford and the football business, and who's going to be next for the Manchester United job. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll also talk about food waste, because apparently businesses are being told that they're going to have to recycle everything, including what they package their stuff up in. There's a new disposable strategy going on to combat climate change and to safeguard resources. Really? Well, what about the urban foxes? What about all the rats that are going to be running up and down the street, eating the food that you're chucking out and leaving in a bin for days on end? 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Well, I have to say there was a ripple of shock going around the office here at Talk Towers this morning, just before this show began. Jose Mourinho sacked with immediate effect by the owners at Manchester United, one of the biggest football clubs in the world. He's been there under a bit of a cloud for the last few months. He hasn't been performing. The team haven't been performing. Alan Brazil joins me now very kindly after finishing his long shift on Talk Sport. Al, very good morning to you.
Mike, you're welcome. Just as we were about to finish, Ben ran in and said, Jose's gone, he's been sacked. I'll just pick up one of the papers, The Mirror, this morning. Jose is a big-name manager playing small-time football, but with no obvious replacement, the Reds board are unlikely to wield the axe. Sky themselves, 10 minutes ago, said it's unlikely. Sky sources tell us Jose's going nowhere.
Yeah.
So it was a surprise, but when you think about it, it's not really, because United have been playing so average of late. It's been bad.
It's been really bad. A massive failing for them, hasn't it been? I mean, I could never understand why the Manchester United board let Sir Alex Ferguson leave at the same time as the chief executive, Mr. Gill.
Yes.
And the whole place seemed to just fall apart. I mean, since then, we've had, you know, Louis van Gaal, who came in to a
David
rather
Moyes.
Poor David Moyes, who didn't actually, on the face of things, do as badly as everyone thought. But what are they going to do now? They're in the middle of the season, still in Europe.
Mate, they need a clear out. Now, this morning, one of the big stories we're dealing with on Talk Sport was... Yeah. Pogba, Italian newspapers are reporting, or sources in Italy, that Juventus are coming in on January for Pogba.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to go, they want him. What happens now? Who takes over?
Well, that's the other thing that's interesting me about the football business now, because Pogba's agent has been quite chippy on the side, hasn't he? He's been sort of nipping away at Jose Mourinho, nipping away at Manchester United. Clearly, there's been a falling out between Pogba and Mourinho somewhere along the line. And somehow, is it possible that this agent has kind of forced the hand of Manchester United to get Mourinho out?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Mendes and Raiola are the two big boys, and they do control world football.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. They have all the big stars and the big managers.
Mm.
So Jose would have known this is coming. Look, he stayed up there in a hotel. Was he settled? He didn't look happy. He lost that sparkle.
He never looked happy, did he?
I'm a Mourinho fan. I like Jose. I went over to Cobham, and I spent a good hour with him, and he was lovely, right? And I like him, and his record of winning things is sensational. But this was a little bit different, Mike. His body language told me it was different. The players going out there... Now, I've never seen a Manchester United team go to Anfield and sort of, not stroll about, but no fight.
Just, they didn't have any fight, no.
No confidence.
No.
And I thought, this can't be, this is not right. So whoever takes over, or caretaker, has got one hell of a job here. because he's going to have to galvanise not just Lukaku and Pogba, he's going to have to galvanise almost every player apart from the goalkeeper.
The fans,
they're
probably
all underachieving.
Yeah, the fans will probably be happy. I mean, I've been noticing over the past, say, couple of months, 2-3 months ago, people were saying, give him his time, he's Jose Mourinho, let him have his head and see how he does. But more and more now, I've been seeing fans who are just saying, just let him go, it's just not working.
Well, it's not working. But I've always said, I think it's partly the players and partly Jose. He's not getting the best out of them. But these guys are different now, Mike. I'm not saying in my day or, you know, even 15 years ago.
Yeah.
These guys are superstars now. And I honestly think to myself, do they really care when they get beat? Do they really care at the end of the month when they played six games and won two, drawn two and lost two? Do they care?
And they've got another $500,000 or maybe 2 million
so
in the bank.
Football has changed, Mike, and I'm not digging out every player. It's just a change in football overall. And this is on the morning or when we hear that they play, you know, they've got a big game.
PSG,
Paris Saint-Germain, which is difficult.
Yeah.
But they're all difficult games at this stage. So whoever takes over, whether it be a permanent, they're talking about $40 million for Pochettino. Has he suddenly said, I'll come in January?
I mean, this is what I'm going to say. I mean, could it be that they haven't got a manager to come in? Would they sack somebody without having somebody to stroll into the job?
Well, they might do. Yeah. Because maybe they've wanted Jose to do a couple of things. Play him, play that. Pogba stays. He said, I'm not having it. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
So that may, you know, it might have been a two-way decision.
What
here.
About the Zinedine Zidane scenario?
Well, I'm coming to that.
Because he's not in a job at the moment,
no,
is he?
No, and they tell me he's learning English, but that could mean anything. You know, that could mean anything.
Well, some
if
of us comes, are still learning English.
But if
worry
he comes,
too much about
well,
that.
Mr. Paddy, how
yeah,
is
well,
he?
Exactly.
But if Zidane comes, Mike,
yeah.
you know, he's got a hell of a job to do as well. They may say with Martial, with Pogba, the French side of it, he'll get them going, but honestly, it's not about a couple of players for United.
No.
I would say it's 9 or 10 players.
Yeah. As long as you say, you want to clear out the whole shebang. Do you think he'll go back to Real Madrid? Because that's the other story that we've been hearing recently.
He could do, Jose. Or he could. Maybe it's time for Jose to have a break. He'll probably head to Dubai.
Yeah.
Have a little break. Look, he's a very wealthy man anyway, regardless of what Manchester United pay him.
Well, he's getting somewhere between 12 and 18 million.
He's minted. He's got loads of dough.
Yeah.
Is it time now for an international job? Take it a little bit easier. Maybe Portugal. Somewhere like that, or you know, I don't know.
But you know what these guys are like. I mean, they love the game, they love the business, they love the cut and thrust of it all. He loves nothing better. I mean, his favourite probably his moment of this year was when he cupped his ear there at Juventus.
Yeah.
You know, because he got a result.
I didn't see that coming.
Because he got a great result there. But he loves all that. I can't see him walking away in a way to just kind of, you know, look after his
allotment. Well, he was at Inter, wasn't he? Done very well. So, look, he's done everywhere. Where he's been, he's done well, apart from Manchester United.
Yeah.
So, look, I wish him well.
Yeah.
I really do. I think, you know, his record, you cannot be lucky and have a record like that. But the game has changed.
Yeah.
And maybe he just couldn't get the best out of an average bunch.
And just away from the football for a minute, I mean, I've been fired loads of times in my life. Sadly, never with this kind of level of money.
Yeah.
But everybody, I want to ask the people out there to call us, 0344-499-1000, because you'll have been sacked from jobs before. I want to hear the stories. You've had a few encounters with the management.
You
sacked a few times from the same place.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fantastic. I mean, it's one of the great records of Talk Sport, is it not? But, I mean, hopefully that's not going to happen again. We never know, though. We're all in this very, very kind of precarious world.
What you
world,
have to do is, if it happens, you roll your sleeves up.
Yeah.
And you be positive.
Listen,
I'm going to get a better job.
Every time I've been sacked, it's always ended up being better for me.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, people, you've got to have that drive.
Yeah.
You've got to have confidence. And that's what's lacking in United's squad, the drive and confidence.
Yeah. And they
so
need
whoever
to get that
goes
back.
In's got a big job to do, Mike.
Absolutely. Alan, thank you very much
indeed. Pleasure.
I will see you tomorrow morning, by which time we might have a new manager at Manchester United.
Look
fantastic
forward to it.
Times. Alan Brazil from the Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast. He's back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning on Talk Sport. Of course, they're going to be talking about this all day today. We're not going to be talking about the football side of it, but we are going to be talking about the sacking side of it, because Jose Mourinho is a figure of international renown. He's not just a football manager. He's a style icon. He's the sort of guy that a lot of other men would like to be. He's the sort of guy a lot of women would like to be married to. He's the sort of guy that you would love to go out for dinner with, quite frankly, whether he gets another job or not. As Alan Brazil just said, he's terribly well off. He is not in any way in need of any sort of money.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So we've got this disposable strategy by the government. Unfortunately, I'd like to be able to tell you that the government has become disposable, but so far they are still there. Incredibly, Theresa May still has a job and Jose Mourinho doesn't. When you figure that one out, you can let me know. 0344 499 1000. We're going to talk now, though, to Anthony Day, a presenter of the Sustainable Futures Report podcast, a man that knows plenty about recycling and whether it's working in this country. But I want to take your calls on it as well, please. And many of you have already been tweeting me, telling me that you've already got food waste recycling and it works pretty well. However, I just have worries about exactly how it's going to work in certain places where the recycling is already not particularly good. Anthony, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. Thanks very much for talking to us. I mean, this is quite a big project. We're being told that this government's sort of sustainability plan is the first big one for about 11 years. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. And not before time. We've been waiting for this for a long time. Mm. But, of course, it's not going to happen until 2023, because now they're setting out the plans, it's going to take them 5 years to put them into action.
Well, there's a sort of consultation period for some of it. Why does everything take so long in this country?
Well, I mean, you've got to realise, if you're going to give hundreds of thousands or even millions of people boxes to collect their food waste, somebody's got to manufacture the boxes, somebody's got to distribute them, there's got to be vehicles to pick them up in, there's got to be somewhere to take them to, and there's got to be a processing plant. So all that's got to be planned, designed and built before we can actually do it.
Yes, no, indeed. And I think everybody understands that recycling is an important part of our sort of daily and weekly lives, but it seems so kind of haphazard all over the country. You know, depending on which part of the country you're in, things are collected differently, things are recycled differently. You know, for example, in London where I live, I've got a massive big recycling sort of bin which everything goes in, right? That's in outside because it's a sort of block of flats shared by a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And where I live in Sussex, you recycle certain things in a pink bag which has to go out every second Thursday to be picked up if it hasn't blown away. And if it's a bottle, it has to go in a different place, and if it's a can, it has to go, you know what I mean? It's like there's no kind of consistency, it seems to me.
You're absolutely right. We should have had a national policy from the off. But the bins are all different colours, all mean different things. No wonder people get it wrong and it's stalling. In fact, recycling is flatlining at the moment at about 44%.
Right.
And the government wants to improve that, and good on them.
No, indeed. The trouble for me, though, is how much money are we spending on it? Is it working in the sense that, yes, of course we have to do it, but do we have to do as much of it as we do? And do we have to do it in the way that we do? Because I seem to remember as well, reading a story maybe last year, that China, which used to take all of our cardboard and repackage it all and sort of recycle the cardboard, which they'd then pay for, they're not taking it anymore.
No, they used to take plastic as well, and that's a big problem because we don't have the facilities in the UK to recycle it or deal with it, and that's suddenly come up on the government's radar, and I think it's partly a reaction to that that's led them to just bring this policy out.
Right. Now, for example, again, I'm just going to talk about my own experience because it's the only one I really know about, obviously. I've got a waste food bin has suddenly appeared in my square. And there's one in every square in which I live, in the little neighbourhood where I live, and it's just one sort of brown wheelie bin, basically. Nobody's been given any instructions on what to do with it. I haven't opened it for fear of what's inside it. I walk past it every day wondering how long before somebody walks off with it, or I find that somebody's knocked it over, or a fox has knocked it. I mean, we have foxes like you wouldn't believe. And I just worry that this is not going to be a very good plan.
Well, certainly if it's an ordinary wheelie bin, once they're knocked over, the lid falls open, and yes, foxes will come from all quarters.
Yeah.
Where you have one per property, they seem to have a locking lid, as far as I know, so that's a bit more secure.
Yeah.
And
This is very much a communal situation.
Yeah, well, something's got to be done about that. That's got to be thought through very carefully, because otherwise you're going to make the situation worse, aren't you?
Well, I think so. I mean, I've got a note here. I've got this tweet from Phil who says, we've got a food bin in Ashford. It does smell and sweat in the summer. It constantly needs washing out. The worst is when you have a barbecue, Christmas, etc., with lots of people. The bin gets full very quickly. I've had to store it in the shed and then take it to the dump myself.
Well, I believe that the report, the government strategy, says that these things should be collected weekly. And, of course, in the summer, that's absolutely essential, and probably for the rest of the year as well.
Right.
So if that works, then that will reduce the problem to some extent.
Yeah. I mean, what is the thinking behind it? Because, I mean, I remember growing up in North London, we had a garden. There was a compost heap at the bottom of the garden. And it was a block of flats type situation. And everybody kind of went and put stuff on the compost heap. It seemed to work quite well. I never really knew what happened to the compost. But, you know, it's not really practical if you live in a very urban situation without a garden to be collecting compost, is it?
No, it's not. And the other thing, of course, is that food waste isn't necessarily all compostable.
Yeah.
If it's vegetable, that's fine. Mm. But if it's got meat and things like that in it, then it doesn't compost very well, and it's very attractive to things like rats and foxes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I'm sort of sitting at home, I generally speaking was taught at a very early age to not leave anything on my plate, so I don't really have an awful lot of food waste, except for the stuff that I'm cooking, you know. So chopping off the ends of carrots and stuff like that, potato peelings and all those kind of things. You know, but some, there'll be some people who do leave quite a lot of food behind, scraping stuff into a bin and then putting all that in the waste, won't they?
Well, if it goes into the waste, the problem is it goes to landfill and it creates methane, which is a greenhouse gas, and all that sort of thing, which is, and that's why the government's trying to get around that by getting people to separate it off into a separate container for food waste.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know, what if you're eating, I mean, I don't want to get too specific here, but I mean, what if you're eating, say, I don't know, a processed piece of food, like a sausage roll or a pork pie, and you put that in there, is that, you know, you're going to put that in the food waste, you're going to put that along with the pasta that you didn't eat, or along with the soup that you didn't finish, or, you know, the mince pies. I mean, it just conjures up this horrible image for me.
Well, yes. I suppose the answer is, well, why did you buy so much if you can't eat it all, but...
Now you're starting to bully me. You know, this is the point. I mean, if that's the point, and this is where I'm very glad you said that, Anthony, because if the point of this is to make people buy less food, then why don't they just say that?
No, the point is to create less waste. And if...
Yeah, but by buying less food, presumably, you create less waste, don't you?
Yes. But let's look at it the other way. If we look at it from the point of view of plastics and things like that...
Yeah.
We can look at recycling plastic, or we can bully the manufacturers, if you want to call it bullying, and say, look, we're going to charge you if you produce plastics which cannot be recycled, if you use too much plastic, if you produce goods, machines, appliances, whatever, that have got a short life and have to go into recycling after a very short time. If we can choke off the production of plastic or of unnecessary plastic, then that will solve the recycling or ease the recycling issue to some extent.
It will. I was reading a while back as well about a new enzyme that had been developed in some laboratory somewhere which actually eats plastic, which would be tremendous for what the problem we have in the seas, you know, the plastic sort of country the size of France that floats around in the Pacific. And I'd like to see more money, and I think most people would like to see more money spent on stuff like that. We appreciate that, you know, there's no point in putting more plastic in the seas, but an awful lot of it does not come from here, does it? An awful lot of it comes from other countries around the world who are not quite as good at recycling as we are.
Well, you're quite right, but sadly, since China stopped accepting our waste, I'm afraid some councils have been forced to sending their waste overseas to those countries which have a lower standard. So some of it might be ours.
So where is it going then, and what happens to it when it gets there? Because people want to know this stuff.
Well, it depends. I think you get probably child labour picking it apart, sorting it out. Some of it can go for recycling, but I don't, they're very concerned about what happens to what can't be recycled.
That's my worry, Anthony. I think a lot of people's worry is that, you know, it's all very well us being very virtuous and separating all our plastic up from our bottles and all of our cans, separated up from our paper and our cardboard and our food. But then you send it all off to some country where, you know, it means nothing to them to just chuck it into a river, and that's where it ends up.
Yeah. Well,
so what's the
if
point?
You read the report the government's just published, it says we're going to lead the world. So let's hope they'll put
we're also going to leave the European Union at some point if they can ever stop arguing about it. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sorry, I don't believe a word they say.
Well, yeah, you're right.
I'm sorry to be so cynical, Anthony. It's just that, you know, we do spend an awful lot of our time, and quite rightly, thinking about climate change and thinking about the environment and trying to make the world a better place to live. But unfortunately, not everybody's as virtuous as we are.
No, I know. But we have to bang on. I mean, that's why I do my weekly podcast. I bang on about the fact that we have got these problems and something must be done. I hope there's somebody out there listening, and eventually somebody in power will actually do something.
Oh, listen, well, the difference in what we do and our behaviours between now and, say, 20 years ago is immense. And it's down to people like you, I'm sure, who have fought the good fight and all of that. However, I think, like everything in life, there is a tipping point. And I think once you start asking people to separate up their food waste as well as everything else, some people are just going to go, I'm just not going to bother. Honestly, I'm just not going to bother.
Well, apparently 100% of people in Wales have got these food containers. Now, I don't know that that means that 100% of people actually fill them and don't ever put it into landfill. But if it doesn't work, then why are they still doing it?
Well, because people have a certain amount of reticence, I suppose, to change. If somebody puts a bin... I mean, for example, I mean, it's like me. I've not seen anyone putting anything into the bin that's in my square. And that, that doesn't mean nobody's using it, but it means that maybe a lot of people like me are literally wondering what it's there for, having not been told what to put in it, having never seen any kind of literature about it, and wondering whether it's just going to be taken away one day and never seen again.
Well, that's obviously not been handled very well at all by the powers that be.
Yeah.
There's scope for improvement there.
Now, the other aspect of this plan, I know there are many aspects of it, is the possibility of the return of a returnable deposit on bottles and cans and disposable cups. Is that something that you can see working?
I think it will. Have you heard about the reverse vending machine?
The reverse vending machine. I have heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, well, some supermarkets, not very many at the moment, have got these machines, and you put your bottle, and it can be a plastic bottle or a glass bottle, or it can be an aluminium can. You put it in, and it's sorted out in the back of the machine, all ready for recycling, and you get a voucher out. It's not for very much, or you can donate it to charity. But I think that will encourage people. You see things like that very widely at supermarkets on the continent.
I mean, in New York, when I used to live there, we used to have the tramps used to walk up and down the streets pushing trolleys full of cans that they would pick up and then take back to a shop and get money and buy food with it.
Yeah, well.
But, I mean, it's not exactly what you would call modern thinking, is it?
No.
Subsidising the homeless.
Hey? Everything used to have a deposit on it once, didn't it?
Well, it did, yeah. I'm old enough to remember when I was a kid that you had a deposit on bottles and things like that. But I think as a result, I didn't buy very often.
Oh, right.
Because it was too expensive. Well, I was a child, you know.
Yeah, but you get your money back.
Yeah, but you have to get the money together in the first place, is my point.
Well,
it makes it more expensive. Yeah. All I'm saying is when all of this comes down to it, it's basically a money-raising exercise, isn't it? People are getting rich on this.
Well, I'm not sure that they will. I'm not sure that they will.
Well, the guys, whoever invented wheelie bins is now probably living in an island somewhere in the South Pacific on their own, having bought it with the profits.
I think he lives in Leeds, actually. I know him.
Does he? Well, he's a very splendid man because he started something which nobody knew we needed, and now everybody's got at least three.
Yeah.
I mean, that's quite a good business. Same, I'm presuming, for the food recycling guys. I mean, if they're going to have to make, you were saying yourself, you have to find somebody to manufacture all of the recycling receptacles, somebody's going to get very wealthy making those.
Yeah, okay, but it's a public service. People get wealthy supplying the NHS, don't they? But that doesn't mean we don't need
another
it and
racket.
They shouldn't do it.
There's another racket. But no, but what I mean is it's people are profiteering out of this, but all we're getting out of it is that we're told we're eating too much, you're buying too much, your packaging is no good, you know, we're the bad guys.
I don't think we're the bad guys. I think we're caught up in a system which is not as good as it should be. So the bad guys are not so much the consumer. The consumer buys what it's given.
Yeah.
We've got to go back to the back up the supply chain to the manufacturers, and we've got to say to them, you know, give us our products, but don't give them in plastic wrapping that we have to throw away. Don't give us in things which we can't recycle.
No, true. But, I mean, they're struggling already, aren't they, the high street companies in this country? They're going bust hand over fist, and you're going to put more financial pressure on them, probably.
Well, no, I think the pressure goes upstage back behind that. It's the people who actually produce the merchandise, which ends up in the high street sector.
Yeah. Well, some of them are the same thing, aren't they, I suppose?
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, listen, here's the thing, Anthony. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you telling us what you think is good. However, you more or less admitted that all of the stuff that we buy and we then recycle ends up in a dump somewhere in the developing world.
No, 44% of it at the moment gets recycled in this country.
Uh-huh.
The government is aiming that 70% should be recycled by 2030. Some people would say that's not nearly enough.
Right.
No, it's not as black as you paint it, but there's room for improvement, certainly.
Yeah, so what actually happens then physically to something that gets recycled in this country?
Well, it depends what it is.
Well, you pick an example and talk me through the process.
Well, if you take glass, for example...
Yeah.
Ideally, glass is sorted so you've got clear glass separate from brown and green.
Yeah.
And then basically it's crushed and broken into little fragments called cullet, and then that goes in to the glass making process. It's mixed up with the materials that they use for making glass, and comes back to you as a bottle or something.
Right.
Or I think the darker ones are used in things like road surfacing and things like that.
Yes, I've seen that actually. That is clever. I'm all for innovation. You see, I'm all for things that work, and I'm all for people with clever ideas. But I can tell you one last thing, Anthony. I don't want you to think that I've got a big downer on you and your podcast or your representations here. However, I remember seeing them empty a bottle bank in Scotland where I used to live, and it had those three holes. You know, brown, clear, and green.
Yeah.
And they picked it up, tipped the whole lot into the back of a skip, and mixed it all up.
Well, they're probably going to go and make road surfacing then.
Well, maybe. But so why bother having the three separate holes?
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Anthony, listen, appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. Anthony Day, a presenter of the Sustainable Futures Report podcast. I can tell he's getting a bit exasperated with me there, but I was trying hard not to be rude. I don't want to be rude to people, but I'm sorry. If half of the stuff that you're recycling isn't being recycled, then it's a massive failure, isn't it? Sometimes I wake up in a different bedroom. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, 03444991000. Coming up, we're going to be doing a great many things. Of course, we're here until 1 o'clock. We're going to be talking about snoring as well, by the way. Apparently, it might be bad for your brain if you snore. Jennifer says this: I've seen at least two videos showing turning plastic bags into different things. One showed a man cramming a machine with plastic bags, which became fuel. Another turned plastic bottles, etc., into pellets and then into oil. Here's one from Alex, who says it's almost as though recycling is now like global warming. Oh, sorry, I mean climate change, which is a billion, if not trillion, dollar business. And I'm still waiting for the acid rain they promised in the 80s. It was meant to hit in the last decade. And here's one from Jim, who says, just on food waste, Iceland the shop contributes to the problem by selling only massive bags of carrots, sprouts and numerous other items in large amounts, which invariably means stuff goes off if you're not eating carrots, for instance, every single day. Well, that's true. They do sell things in ridiculously high quantity, don't they? Let's talk to Matt, who's in Weston-super-Mare. Hello, Matt.
Hi, good morning, Mike.
Morning.
How are you doing?
Very well, sir. What do you want to tell us?
On these food wasting, we've been doing it in North Somerset, Weston-super-Mare, for at least a couple of years.
The food.
And I really don't see that there's a problem. The actual design of the bin, when you pull the handle down, it locks the lid.
What sort of bin is it though? Is it big, small? What? Tell me. Describe it.
It's a small bin. It's not massive. It doesn't take up loads of space. We live directly behind a really large wooded area, so there's loads of wildlife around us. I see foxes, badgers, rats, all that kind of stuff all the time.
No, they're all coming for the food, obviously.
Yeah, no, but they're not. That's the thing. Not once since Weston introduced it have I had food on my drive.
Okay. And does the bin sit outside the house or inside? Because some of them are saying they want you to have a place inside where you keep it, and then you take it outside sort of once a week.
Yeah, no. So we've got a smaller little caddy inside the house with the compostable bags inside that.
Okay.
And the cleaners empty the bags into the larger bin a couple of times a week, and it gets collected on a weekly basis, and there really is not a problem with it.
But don't you see the irony as well of using a plastic bag to recycle food waste?
Yeah, but it's a compostable bag, so that recycles automatically anyway.
Oh, I see, okay, right. But doesn't it smell a bit, though, in the summer?
Sometimes when it's really hot, the smaller bin inside the house, it can smell a little bit.
Yeah, because if I've got a bin in the house, I mean, sometimes in the summertime, right, when it was really, really hot, my flat gets very hot in London, okay? My bin, actually, at one point, I thought it was on fire because it was so warm.
Yeah.
Right, I put my hand against it, and it's it's one of those swing top bin things, right? And it felt like it was really, really hot. And I looked in it, and it was just because of the fact that it's enclosed that it generated all this heat. And I couldn't keep anything in there for very long because it got very stinky.
Yeah, it's not perfect for sure.
Right.
And and I agree with you. If stuff is not being recycled, yeah. you know, the councils, everybody's always going, you know, I'm not an eco-warrior.
Right.
I'm just a normal guy, and I'm quite happy to recycle, but if not being recycled, what's the bloody point? But
well,
the
exactly.
food waste...
But do you know where the food waste is going, though, Matt?
Yeah, the food waste is turned into fertilisers and stuff like that, which is a good thing.
Well, it is, yeah, but how do you know that's happening?
The council has sent out leaflets and all that kind of stuff, so we know that that's what's happening with the food waste.
Okay, well, you know because they're telling you, basically. But yeah. they're not going to tell yeah. you that, by the way, we just take it offshore and dump it in the sea, because, you know, they might be doing that as well. We don't know, for example. I didn't know until I spoke to that guest we just had on, Anthony Day, that more than half of the stuff we recycle in this country ends up in a developing country, basically, being used as rubbish.
Yeah, and that's bang out of order. That really is. It's bang out of order. And like I said, it's not perfect, but it's better than the alternative and sticking it all in landfills, surely.
Well, I don't know what's better than the, I mean, it just seems to me that it's a very expensive process. I mean, they've got to employ people to come and collect the bins, right? They've got to buy the receptacles, for which you presumably got for nothing. They've got to spend money transporting it, right? They're putting out all sorts of emissions as a result of that. I'm just not sure about the efficacy of it all, that's all.
Yeah, well, you know, you may be right, but like I said, we've been doing it for a few years. We have no problems with animals, with the wildlife around the area. The bins are designed well, and fundamentally, I think it's a good idea.
OK. Well, listen, you're very persuasive, Matt. Thanks for your call. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham, you know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we've got another national disaster on our hands. Apparently, the new Yorkshire Tea Eco Tea Bag, because it's supposed to be good for the environment, right, is ruining everybody's tea because it keeps falling apart. It's a biodegradable sachet, apparently, and it doesn't work, basically. We're going to talk to Grant Harold, former Royal Butler, about what to do if your tea bag it disintegrates, because it must be very embarrassing, particularly if you're in company. 0344 499 1000. Susan's in Wolverhampton, though. Hello, Susan.
Hello there.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, yeah.
Good. What do you want to tell us?
A few things. First of all, Wolverhampton just got rid of their food bins.
Have they?
We used to have them every other week, a little bin, and we had a recycle bin, a green bin, and a black waste, where
right.
it's non-recyclable. They've now got rid of all of them, and now we have an alternate bin for recycling. And for waste, you can't recycle.
Right. So how many bins have you got, Susan, altogether?
We've gone from 4 to 2.
Right, OK. And did they say why they did that?
Costs.
So too expensive. See, I think that's the problem. It's very expensive doing all this, isn't it?
Yeah. And so there we do that. So they're not going to start that up now under the government thing. The other thing was the compost bins, you can't put cooked food on the compost bin. It attacks rats.
Oh, really? OK.
Yeah.
So the compost should only really be sort of vegetable cuttings and stuff like that?
Yeah, because otherwise you'll get rats in it.
Yeah.
And then I did write to Mr Gove about this about a year and a half ago when he became Environment Secretary. Newcastle Council send their indestructible, unrecyclable waste to Sweden.
Do they?
Because they've got such a state-of-the-art incinerator there.
Right.
That they use it to generate electricity.
Yeah.
But it's virtually no emissions come from it.
Right. Now, well, that's a good thing, because I'm all in favour of doing this stuff, as long as there's a point to it. There's an incinerator in South London here, which is completely and utterly enclosed. You know, I think it creates, as you burn, it makes gas or something, so that you can power something else with it, which is great.
Yeah. Well, Newcastle Council paid to have their waste sent them, because the Swedes have used all theirs up.
Right. That's amazing, isn't it? So, I mean, did you actually used to recycle the food then?
Yeah.
You did it yourself. So if you can't use meat, right, so say you've got some spaghetti bolognese or something that nobody's finished, What do you do with that? Do you put the pasta separately and put that in the recycling food bin and then put the meat in the normal bin?
No. It never happens in our house, to be honest, Mike.
Really?
There was very little food waste.
Okay, all right.
Eating also, trying to work it out properly so we didn't have any.
Right.
You know, because... So there was only bits and bobs. But they just said we could put any cooked food in that bin and they would send it to an incinerator.
Right. So
that's what they told
them. That's crazy, isn't it? What's the point? Madness.
But with that same thing, about, I saw that thing about the incinerator on a documentary about Newcastle Council.
Right.
And what they were saying was that if you take your average plastic bottle, say a Coke bottle, it's got three different types of plastic on it.
Yeah.
It's the plastic it's made of, the plastic cap is different, is a different type of plastic, and that shrink-wrapped thing that they get round to with the details of the item on it are three different types of plastic, and some of it's recyclable, so some of it isn't. So what they were saying was the cap and the outside sheath weren't recyclable.
Right.
So you have to take those off and put them in the normal bin, and then the bottle was. Well, the manufacturers aren't making it easy. It should be all recyclable.
No, it should be. But this is the point. It's unclear. Nobody really knows what to do.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's not actually being recycled anyway.
Yeah. And the other thing was, these people like Amazon and Costa Coffees, they are the people who should be paying, because they are generating so much rubbish.
Yeah.
Then it's just unbelievable. And then they get away with not paying their taxes.
Yeah. I know, it's
so
shocking.
We're not taxing them on that.
It's shocking. Susan, you're absolutely right. That is a great point. Very, very well made as well. 0344 499 1000. We've got to move on, though, because we've got loads going on. Henry says, when I was an agency HGV driver, I had a three-week stint on the bin lorries, and at the end of the round, it all went into the same incinerator hole, regardless if it had been green or a household round. You see, I've got to say, I just don't believe these councillors are doing the job properly. Let's talk to Grant Harrell, though. He is, of course, the former royal butler, because a terribly depressing and upsetting story for anyone who likes to drink tea is that the new eco-friendly, biodegradable Yorkshire tea bags actually don't work. Grant, very good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. I'm sitting here with my bag of smelling salts, a complete panic.
I mean, can you imagine anything worse than serving up some tea to a member of the royal family, only to discover that the bag has burst in the pot?
I couldn't even begin to imagine. I mean, we all think we've got problems in Britain at the moment. Well,
yeah.
This tops it.
I know. Never mind Brexit.
Exactly.
This is absolutely horrendous news. Now, I don't know whether you've tried these biodegradable tea bags, have you?
No.
Quite right, too.
They sound lovely, but I haven't.
Now, the last time you and I spoke about tea, I seem to recall you telling me that you had one of those rather nice sort of diffusers.
I do.
That you put tea leaves in it and put that in the water instead.
Well, I've kind of upgraded a bit. I've got a tea strainer.
Ah.
I've got a very smart tea strainer that I use, and I like my loose tea.
Yes.
I'm not saying that I don't have tea bags, because some people come to the house and they'll say, actually, can I have a tea bag? So, of course, I've got some tea bags if anybody really wants the tea bag. But can you imagine saving up the tea bag and then suddenly it breaks apart in the cup?
Well,
I think I'd be so embarrassed.
You'd have to just leave the country, wouldn't you?
Literally,
get the next plane out of town.
Yes.
Well, I mean, are you one of those people that has ever put tea bags into a teapot?
Yes, I have.
Have you?
Yes, that's fine.
See, that surprises me.
What I don't like, I take them back out. I don't leave them in.
So
you get a dunk.
Okay.
They're in for a couple of minutes and then straight back out.
Right.
Ideally, tea leaves are my preferred option. But some people, again, they prefer tea bags. They'll even bring tea bags to my home and say, this is the ones that we like to have.
Yeah.
So that's fine. In the teapot, they'll go a couple of minutes out the teapot, because otherwise they'll stew. But what people don't realise is that the actual tea bag, it was actually the invention of the tea bag. It was so that it could be transported from the States around the world.
Oh, yeah.
And when it came over here, as Brits, we thought, this is great. You know, this is brilliant. It's not packaging. You just put the whole thing in the cup. And that's where the tea bag was born.
I see. Well, what idiot came up with the idea of making it biodegradable then? Because it clearly doesn't work.
Well, I don't know. And I was obviously reading about this, and it's a little bit kind of worrying, you know, when you kind of hear the kind of disaster stories. And I feel so sorry for so many people across the country that are serving up their teas as we speak, and suddenly they've got the, God knows, at the bottom of the cup, you know, obviously the remains of everything is still there.
Oh.
I say it's just highly embarrassing. So the only option is to go back to loose tea.
Yes, because, I mean, regardless of how good or otherwise the tea bag actually is, generally speaking, the tea inside a tea bag is not as good as loose tea,
no.
is it?
No, it's very much the kind of dredge, if you like. It's just what's kind of left over that you get. So that's why it's better just to go that little bit, you know, just go up that little bit and just get the tea leaves. Yes. And then also at the end of it, if you want, you can even read the tea leaves. So add to all the joy of having an afternoon tea.
Well, do you know, I don't want to show off, but I used to work in a tea room making tea.
Oh, okay.
And one of the great tricks that I learned there was that if you stir the tea leaves inside the pot once they've been in there for a little while, not too vigorously, just a sort of gentle stir, close the teapot lid, and then very gently with your silver spoon or whatever kind of spoon you've got, tap the side of the teapot, right? And all the tea leaves will fall to the bottom of the pot.
Love it. I've never heard of that.
And then when you pour it, you can actually not even use a tea strainer.
I love the tea strainer. You know, I like the tea ceremony. I like using the fine bone china. Uh-huh. I like my tea strainers, my sugar tongs, sugar cubes. I do the full works.
Okay. And is your preferred tea of choice? I think I've asked you this before. It's not Earl Grey, is it? Is it English breakfast?
Actually, no. Earl Grey is my favourite. If I ever go anywhere, it's not my Earl Grey. And I've also discovered something called jasmine pearls.
Oh yes. Very nice.
I really enjoy, especially last thing at night.
Jasmine tea is beautiful. Very, very, very really medicinal. And very good for you as well.
It is. And it'll calm everyone down with this crisis that we're having as well.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a massive crisis. But thank you, Grant, for trying to help us through it. Grant Harold there, the former Royal Butler, the man who knows all there is to know about making tea.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.